we are to observe the podcaster in their natural habitat. As we gather around the podcast player, we hope to catch some of the tasty morsels of information that the podcaster may have discarded. Let us calmly observe so that we do not disturb the podcasters during their ritual. Hello and welcome to the Linux Lads. My name is Connor, and with us today we have Mike.
Hi, people.
And Shane.
Hello.
So, Shane, what have you been up to during this past while?
I've still been getting to grips with KDE Neon. So, like we were talking about before we began recording, it's a different experience to what I'm used to, for sure. It's a completely different philosophy to GNOME or anything else I've tried. It's like, let's pack as much options and as much information into everything as we can. But like at the same time, it's structured very logically. It's kind of a nerd's dream, really. There's just configuration options everywhere for everything. But that said, the menus make sense. I've never found myself coming up against any difficulty when I've tried to do anything. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Who knows? I could be sick of it in 2 weeks' time and just go back to GNOME, which could happen. But, whatever. That's the beauty of Linux, isn't it?
Very much, exactly. That's the whole thing, is a lot of us are distro hoppers until we settle on something. And even if we settle on something, we could settle on something for 6 months and then something new and shiny comes up. We're like, ooh, I've not tried that out in a while. So, yeah, it's the never-ending story of the distro hopper. So, Mike, what have you been up to?
I've been too busy with work to do much more other stuff, but I was showing somebody, I was working with someone, and I was showing her some task that I do, and she was pretty taken aback by the way you can use Vim to do a lot of editing on a bunch of things extremely fast. So I think I was advocating a little bit there for Vim and Linux in general, because this kind of thing would be very difficult to do on Windows. Unless you install Vim, I don't know if that's the thing. That's actually a thing.
And what I've been up to is, well, not much in relation to the Linux side. I had a friend of mine coming over from Arizona, so that was, I took 2 days off in order to make a 4-day long weekend out of it. So a lot of all the tourist shite that you normally do in Dublin, so the Guinness Storehouse, the various museums, the Natural History Museum, the National Archaeological Museum, what else did we get up to? Oh yeah, the Trinity Library, which I do actually recommend. It's €14, which is a bit steep, but you can spend as much time as you want in there. Some people literally spent the €14 and just walked straight through it, spent 5 or 10 minutes walking straight through it. I think I spent literally an hour taking photographs in there, so there's no sense of urgency. There's nobody kind of pushing you along saying, no, you have to get out of here or whatever. Yeah, you can literally spend hours in there if you want.
Is that the long hall in Trinity?
Yeah, the long library or the long room or whatever they call it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's breathtakingly beautiful. It's seriously something out of Hogwarts. And I think there was controversy there. The Trinity people thinking that the Hogwarts library was inspired by it or whatever.
I think it was the Star Wars. Actually, it was George Lucas who inspired himself when he was creating Star Wars. I'm not sure exactly which, but I think it's the Jedi place in one of the earlier Star Wars movies was modeled after the Trinity Library.
It's absolutely unreal. I mean, just. It's the whole sensory experience. I mean, I'm sure you can see the awe of it in photographs, but when you're there, just the smell of it, everything, just the whole experience of it, I'd highly recommend it. but I would highly recommend spending a decent amount of time there in order to get your money's worth, because €14 is a bit steep if you're only spending like five or 10 minutes in the place. But yeah, there's no rush. There's no, as I said, I think we literally spent an hour to an hour and a half just walking around this. It's not a particularly long room or a big room. Well, it's fairly big, but like to spend an hour in a room is a lot. So, but we literally walked around, then sat down for a while, then walked around a bit more, sat down for a while in order to get our money's worth, and it was well worth it. And I remember on the last podcast I said that I finally got my microphone working, and then as soon as I stopped recording and listened back, I realised I was freaking recording on my webcam mic rather than my decent microphone, which this one is. So pretty sure I'm still recording on the right microphone now, otherwise I'm a complete fucking idiot. But anyway, so after all my thing of saying I'm back on Linux and no more Windows and I'm recording on the right thing, turns out it was not recording on the right thing, but oh well. So now that we've caught up with each other, what everyone's been up to in the last couple of while, I think we'll move on to our coupon code. So we have a coupon code for Azar VPN, which they were kind enough to give us when we asked, which is 30% off 3 months. So if you go on their website and sign up for their 3 month plan, if you see code Linux Lads when you're ordering, don't forget to click the add code button and then you'll get the discount, and that discount is valid up until the 1st of January 2020. So that is a 30% off the Azar VPN service when you sign up for 3 months. And they're fairly nifty guys. I mean, they run Debian on their own servers, they own their own hardware, it's not like they farm out their own hardware. They're based in Sweden and the Swedish government don't require them to log their traffic, so they don't. And they have locations all around the world, including Europe and North America, and they provide a WireGuard option, and WireGuard as well as OpenVPN, and WireGuard is all this new hotness. So if you fancy trying out WireGuard, you have a nice 30% off a 3 month plan with Azar VPN. So now moving on to the news. So the first bit of news is the Article 13 has been passed in the EU Parliament. So this is very controversial. There's a in our show notes we will have a breakdown of how the MEPs voted in a PDF form, and apparently there's some confusion among the MEPs as to what they're voting on, whether they're voting on the actual thing or whether they're voting on it to be scheduled for another time or something like that. So Mike, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think the confusion there was, as pointed in a Guardian article, that the MEPs wanted to add some amendments that would break down the vote, so Articles 11 and 13 would be voted on separately, and they had a vote about adding the amendments or not, and some of the MPs who wanted to add the amendments didn't voted against it. Somehow they got confused. I'm not sure how it works there. I always imagine there would be two buttons, maybe one green, one red, but it's probably more involved into taking confused like this. So if that didn't happen, if there was no confusion, there could have been a vote on those articles separately and maybe they wouldn't have passed. Maybe we can just briefly say what they are. So the bulk of the most controversial stuff in the law, it's a whole law that has got other stuff in it, but the Articles 11 and 13 respectively, one of them aims to strengthen the copyright protections for news publishers against reusing their stuff. So if you share a piece of news on your site, you should, the news publishers are worried that they don't get the revenue from the visit because the visit doesn't happen because you basically take the stuff that they worked on and you republish it. And the Article 13 increases responsibility of internet companies to prevent their platform from being used for copyright infringement. So there's link tax in Article 11, so you'd have to pay if you want to link to a piece of news, I think, if I remember it properly, and content filters in Article 13. So if you have a site that shares video, you would be responsible for there not being any pirated content. And I mean, the repercussions of this are big. This is a massive change. There are many people who think that this is definitely a bad thing to do. It's going to pass. I think now it's going to be to the national parliaments to ratify it for each country. So that's I think where it's at.
Yeah, I think I've been seeing some stories in the news over the last week or two, specifically in The Guardian, where that was our source for the confusion around the voting in the European Parliament. But I saw them publishing a few articles from musicians like Bjorn from ABBA and Debbie Harry as well. And I was like, oh, Blondie and ABBA have a problem with it. Oh, shit. we've definitely lost. But I was like... I was reading it going, yeah, from their perspective, it's very good and it's very important. But like, big picture here, like it's great for big publishers. It's great for, you know, it's great for reining in tech giants. That aspect of it, I kind of like, but at what cost? I mean, it's typical politicians. They think that the solution to a technical problem is far simpler than it actually is. They don't really appreciate the mechanisms within the system that will have to be created, and it'll just really stifle things. Like it's just not good news. I mean, hopefully the implementation in the member states has some leeway, and it's not quite as draconian at the member state level when it is implemented. But you know, I just don't think they think technology is some kind of bloody magic bullet. She's like, oh yeah, we can slap a filter on that. We can slap a, just write a computer program, computer man, and like that. That's not how it works.
Well, let's not forget that the proponents of these things and the lobbyists are the same industries who try to stop Napster and Kazaa in the beginning of the 2000s, and the ones who try to stop the same people who were horrified by iTunes and who are still not very happy with things like Spotify and I think Netflix, right? So if I get it right, these are the same people who think that they can siloed away their content, prevent people from sharing it, which is a natural thing that SV people want to do. So make it very hard to use, and they think people will still be bothered to actually pay for that privilege. I think what they don't realize is that not only they are making our lives harder and they are going to sink some good businesses and destroy some communities. Wikipedia could be a massive victim of this, for example. But they are also going to damage themselves in the process. I mean, if New York Times publishes an article and they don't want me to share it, then, well, why would I even bother reading it? How would I even know about it until I read New York Times every day, which I don't? So if they want me to go to their site, they have to be able to share what they've got. It's as easy as that. And if they don't understand it, and I singled New York Times not knowing which they're actually for in this debate, but if people think this is going to improve anything, including publishing and content creators, they are, in my opinion, very badly mistaken.
I honestly have not had that many insights into it. From what I'm understanding, as you're saying, is just only hurting independent artists in the long run, and it's going straight to the corporations. So it's pretty much all the usual antiquated lobby groups that have a lot of money and can employ loads of people to constantly be saying, hey, MEP person, do you know this, and it's just volume, and then that's all that's in the that MEP's mind is, well, my general impression of this is that it's going to go, it's this thing which could be a complete and utter falsitude or whatever, which is, I suppose, is the whole point of lobbying. But there should definitely be a not-for-profit or something like that lobby group, which I suppose there's the EDRI in Europe, which I've a lot of time for, which is the people listening in North America are unfamiliar with it, is the probably rough approximate is the European equivalent of the EFF. So they're a digital rights advocacy group and lobby group. So I would have a lot of time for the EDRI. And they're doing their best they can, but they can only do so much. I mean, the amount of money that they have versus the amount of money that for example, the record industry have, or telecommunications or whatever, because telecommunications are also now coming into the cable companies, which could be affected by this as well, where it's TV content or something like that. It's a whole mess, and I don't really know where to even to begin, to be honest. So with that, I suppose we'll move on to the next bit of news. So if you want to get your Disco Dingo, the 1904 beta has come out. So no longer alpha or daily images, or is it nightlies or dailies? Anyway, it's no longer the early stages or the alphas. You can now get a beta, and I've used Ubuntu betas in the past, and they tend to be pretty solid for somebody who's anyway tech savvy. In other words, if you're informed enough to know that it's a beta and you're running it, and then all of a sudden you get this massive error coming up on your screen and your computer is absolutely frozen, you have the knowledge to be able to wipe it and go back to 1810 or 1804 or something like that. You can pave, essentially. Once you have that knowledge, then running a beta is perfectly fine, and you might find that it's perfectly stable. But I wouldn't recommend that you put this down in front of your granny, because if her computer locks up, then she'll go into a bit of a panic and you wouldn't know how to get herself out of that situation. But for the tech savvy listeners out there, it might be something to check out, the 1904 beta. And from what I can understand, there's been vast speed improvements with GNOME in the latest GNOME version, and 1904 also comes out with the Linux 5.0 kernel, so the very latest kernel and very latest hardware and security updates inherent with that kernel. So Shane, any thoughts on this 1904 beta coming out?
I was going to try it. I haven't tried it yet, but it does look very nice. Nice. And I was looking at the updates to GNOME Shell and stuff, and like they mentioned in the article that we have in the notes, it's a very incremental update, and it's not groundbreaking by any stretch. There are some good additions in there, like the fractional scaling in GNOME. That is handy, because I've got a 1440p monitor, and I do get that issue sometimes with Linux distros. Things will just look wrong. Like the scaling will be all wrong. So that's good to see. Just the look of it in general is very nice. I've never really used Ubuntu for any length of time in the past, but yeah, I don't know. I'm happy to give it a go in VirtualBox or something like that and see what it's like. Who knows, in 2 weeks when I get sick of KDE Neon, I could go to Ubuntu.
Mike, I think you were saying in the group chat that you have downloaded and possibly have tried out this 1904 beta.
I've tried a daily release. I'm not sure what's the difference between the two of them, but
I think if you install a daily and then just do all your updates, it's effectively the same thing.
And everything seemed to work. Everything was very nice. I gave it about half an hour. So it looks like just another solid Ubuntu release that we are all getting used to. And, you know, it has got... I'm really in favor of speed improvements. And, you know, Ubuntu is the probably most important desktop Linux distribution. So I'm happy to see them progressing in a great way.
I would certainly agree with that. I mean, there are certainly some large contenders, such as Fedora, which has the backings of Red Hat and now the backings of IBM behind it. So they're exactly not short of the dosh either. But I think the company that seems to put most of its focus focus and the most emphasis on just little things, the usability, the average desktop user is definitely canonical with Ubuntu. Little things like adding your printer, adding Bluetooth devices, the fractional scaling. I don't know who because I don't have access to the internal mailing list of the GNOME developers, but I don't know who proposed it or whether it was canonical or whether it was somebody from the Red Hat team or even somebody from, let's say, OpenSUSE or something like that. But I would say probably a lion's share of the development would probably have come from the canonical team. Again, this is all speculation because I don't have access to the internal mailing list of the GNOME developers. So I do not know where the impetus came for that fractional scaling improvement came from. But in general, the fact that Ubuntu have taken reverted back to GNOME versus Unity means that there are some skilled developers who are contributing back to something that previously was just Red Hat and Fedora and possibly OpenSUSE and maybe Arch developers or a few others, but it's just another big company that's contributing to it, which is only can be good, and they're contributing to the same product. So I think those refinements are starting to show fruit now with Canonical's contributions. So, tangentially related, something that isn't based off GNOME Shell, but is based off GTK3, and is based off the GNOME stack, but a different implementation of it. There's a new version of Solus. Solus 4 has finally coming out, and hell has frozen over. I think they were on 3.9999999999 for absolutely ages because they're afraid to drop the big Solus 4. From what I'm just looking at the article here, from what I can see, it's some nice refinements. Almost in the same vein as the latest GNOME release, where it's just kind of nicely refined and nice, just little niceties. It seems to be that the Solus release is the exact same, just kind of nice UI improvements, nice little usability improvements, just little things here and there. It's kind of a nice, refined, mature release. So anyone who likes Budgie, I would recommend that you check it out. And of course, Budgie is cross-platform. There's Ubuntu Budgie. You can install it on Arch. You can install it on various other things. So it's not just on Solus. But they're coming up to the latest, up to the 4.20 kernel. So you should be getting some security patches and hardware improvements as well.
I've just been looking at the screenshots. It does look very nice. My issue with Solus, I guess, has always been application support, so you kind of have to run everything in a snap, which I'm not a fan of. I kind of like to have apps integrated into the stack of the OS. I'm not a fan of these containerized apps. I know they're popular with many at the moment, but they're just not my kind of thing. There is one cool, interesting thing I see here in Budgie, though, that's caffeine mode. That's kind of interesting. So that introduces a new applet called caffeine mode. So it makes sure that when you're kind of doing stuff and you're in the zone, that, you know, your screen doesn't dim, or like, you know, your computer doesn't, you know, go into hibernation or anything like that while you're working. So that is kind of cool. It turns your display brightness up to max or a designated brightness level. So that's kind of nifty. Very unpleasant on the eyes, though, I can imagine. But yeah, really, really pretty distro. Very solid, you know, very sensibly put together. Yeah. All the lads have done a great job.
One point of clarification. I have used Solus in the past, and it's not based on anything else. I mean, a lot of new distros are based off Debian, or they're based off Arch, or they're based off a pre-existing distro. This is its own thing from the ground up, and it has its own package manager. So it actually, it does have its own native store and native applications. It's just the package manager itself, I believe, there wasn't a lot of natively compiled applications, so sometimes what it would do is it would get an application that was compiled for something else and then compile it from scratch. And I believe if you try to install Google Chrome on it, it absolutely took an absolute fucking age. So, and I bear witness to that. So when I was trying it out Solus, I was like, oh, cool. Google Chrome appears to be available for this install. Why is Google Chrome taking ages? So I believe there's improvements on that side of things where you try to install a native application. And I believe that was also why they embraced snaps and flatpacks so readily. It was nicely containerized. It would greatly improve the install times and things like that. So like when most distros, whether you're Debian, Arch, Ubuntu, Fedora, or OpenSUSE or whatever, it does have snap and flatpak support, which is quite useful. So in the next bit of news, Steam has come out with a redesign, and I've been looking through this article here, and it is certainly a vast improvement from what I can see. Steam, I'm not saying it's a bad user interface. It's just it's pleasant to look at, and it works, and it does everything. I've no real complaints about it. It's just, it's long on the tooth, so it's kind of something that it's in the background. I don't really think about it. It's simple and it does the job. And but this seems to be a quite nice redesign. So there's definitely some artistic talent over there involved when it comes to 2D interfaces and so on. Obviously the screenshots and everything will be in the article listed in the show notes. I'm just thumbing through these screenshots here, and it definitely does look like a nice improvement. One thing that is rumored, I don't necessarily see it in the screenshots, just looking, but one thing that is rumored is that the chat app is going to be integrated back into the main app, whereas at the moment it's its own floating window, which, to be honest, drives my fucking head in.
I hate that thing so much. Yeah, it's a nice design. The fonts look really nice. That's one small thing that stuck out to me, was just the lettering and the fonts looks really good. Other than that, as you said, like, the Steam client isn't something I ever really look at. I mean, I don't game that much, but when I do, I just go in there to launch the game and I don't really pay much attention to it. But yeah, it's nice that it looks nicer. That's never a bad thing.
Mike, any thoughts?
I almost don't game at all. So for me, basically Steam is just a launcher for games, and I think I've bought games through it or through Humble Bundle. So yeah, anything that makes gaming on Linux better, even visually more appealing, I'm all for it. Obviously I appreciate that Valve has done a lot of work for for the Linux community by including Linux as a viable platform. Personally, I don't really have any thoughts because I don't use the Steam interface that much to actually even think about it.
The next bit of news, I will touch on this briefly, but I think is worth mentioning, is KDE Connect is back in the Play Store. So I believe there was some controversy about Google was updating its policies, and because KDE Connect has access to your text messages in order to have them pop up on your desktop, this whole syncing aspect to it, I think they were running into controversy with Google and the Play Store, but thankfully they resolved that and KDE Connect is back in the Play Store. The next bit of news, somewhat controversially, Google is jumping into gaming with what they're calling Google Stadia, and the basic rundown of this is they're going to use their massive servers and their massive computing capabilities to essentially stream a game to your browser, and they have visions in the future whether this will be able to be implemented as smoothly as they believe it will be. Is you're going to be watching either a trailer for a game on YouTube or somebody playing the game on YouTube, as in a Let's Play or whatever, or somebody streaming their game on YouTube, and a little pop-up will come up in the corner saying, do you want to jump into this game? And as long as you're paying the $10 a month, $15 a month, or whatever the service ends up being, they have visions of you just being able to click on it and then jumping into the game with your gamepad. So what are your guys' thoughts on this?
Well, I always hear that Google is trying to make something and it's meant to be really good for users. So basically, the way people were talking about this is A, there is going to be a game streaming service. B, it's good for Linux because it's going to run on Linux servers. So whoever make game studios are going to make games for Linux because they would want them on this platform. And three, there's going to be this integration that you were talking about. So you watch a video and you jump into the game. But for God's sake, it's Google. They have got, in my opinion, two massive things against them. One is that they cannot put together a nice interface to save their life. So whatever they do, you know, they have this massive server power, but whatever they do, at least for me, is pretty much unusable. Starting from Gmail, everything else except Google Search, which is just a simple bar that you type your search into. And even that is somewhat screwed up by the way they show you the results. So I don't believe that they will do it properly, or that it will be particularly usable. Second, I lost my train of thought. Anyway, so basically, there's one problem. Second problem, it's going to be running in a browser, and you will have to have a very decent connection for this actually to work, which I can imagine that's going to be maybe not a problem for some people in Dublin, but in many other areas, like, that's going to be unusable. And, of course, there's the privacy aspect. But if you're already using YouTube and Gmail, then obviously that's already forfeited. And third, they have a history of canning things that they did. So they might run it for a year, then decide, oh, this doesn't make any sense, and kill the service, you know.
Two brief clarifications there. Is one thing you're saying, yeah, it is very first world, as in you're not going to get anybody in Africa probably playing this. Well, I'm not saying exclusively, but it's less likely than places in Europe or North America. I think they suggest like at least 20 to 25 meg broadband, which a lot of people in the first world would be getting up to or exceeding, but maybe not a lot of people in poorer parts of the country or parts of the world. And also the second thing I was just going to say is, straight off on their announcement, it did seem to be, as you were saying, Linux servers, it seemed to be Linux first is the whole thing. They had two big things up on the screen. It says Linux and Vulkan, which is only going to help. I mean, Valve are doing it by themselves at the moment, but I believe that's only going to help developers going in that direction.
Is it? Or are they? So I would recommend everybody to listen to the latest Code Radio, where they touched on this, and they raised the point that, yeah, Google does these things for on Linux, but is it going to be targeted their specific proprietary-ish version of Linux with some kind of custom APIs, or is it going to be transferable to gaming on the desktop as well? We don't know about this. I heard somewhere else somebody pointing at the fact that all Google's infrastructure runs on Linux, but we don't have a Linux Google Drive native client yet. So it's all up there for discussion and for speculation. So far, Google hasn't released any real facts, as far as I know, and I don't trust them to implement this in so that it will be any much good.
Yeah, I have to agree. While I definitely see Connor's point that the you're going to get an awful lot of upstream updates and stuff like that, and it will encourage more developers to get into the Linux/Vulkan space. I don't know. It's just Google at the end of the day, and I think they use Linux and they contribute to it quite a lot, and they contribute financially and with code and stuff, but. At the same time, it's just their way of doing things is not our way of doing things. So I don't like someone else, providing me with a little pipe of data. Like, I want that data within my house, it's just another compelling service that they will provide that I just will refuse to use because I don't like the way they do things. I think they have too much power and they're a monopoly and whatnot. So, I try to resist that as much as I can with my own kind of daily computing and my daily digital life or whatever you want to say. I don't know, on the surface maybe it is cool, but yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to use it, most likely, just out of principle.
I will move through the news very briefly. So there's a new version of Wine coming out, speaking of Vulkan. So it now has better Vulkan integration, improved Vulkan integration, and also improved media support, media API support, and also, which kind of ties into her discussion, which we'll get into in a second, there is the next Doc 2, which is coming out, and it's coming out on crowdfunding, is Kickstarter, I believe. And so it's a very compelling device. It's something that either a Raspberry Pi or your phone, you'll be able to hook up to your laptop and use that as part of your computing. And so I think it's about time to get into our discussion. So a convergence device, would you actually use one?
No. I have to be honest, I would never use one. I just don't see the point. I have a computer that's nicely converged already, so yeah, I don't get the kind of whole convergence thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying maybe I just don't see the usefulness in it from my perspective. But yeah, I mean, it certainly is cool, but like, it's a curiosity for me. Like, and I can see definitely a use case for some people, but for me, not so much.
I think we should define which kind of convergence. Say there's the next dog that you just mentioned. That's basically a laptop shaped device that has a screen and a keyboard, and you plug something like a phone into it, which the phone has to have a desktop mode, so it has to be one of the newest flagship Huawei or flagship Samsungs, and it would, if you plug a phone into it, it will run Android in desktop mode, and you can use the keyboard and the screen. If you plug a Raspberry Pi into it, it with a desktop distribution, it will show you the distribution. If you plug like a Windows compute stick into it, it will show you Windows 10. So that's one way of doing conversion. Next conversion is the Convergence. Next Next idea, which is slightly different, is the Maru OS or the one of the Samsung Dexis ways of doing it. You plug a phone into a screen and connect a keyboard and mouse via Bluetooth, and suddenly you have, instead of Android in desktop mode, you have a Linux distribution that runs as kind of a firmware up on the device. And third way of doing convergence is the Purism proposed way. They haven't produced it yet, is that the applications that they use on the laptops and the applications that they used on the Librem phone are going to be the same, and you can and they will work in independently of the screen size. They will scale properly. So I think it's important to define which of these types we are talking about. I personally don't really care for the one with the next dock device, or for anything where I have to lug another big thing with me. It's like, why wouldn't I just take a laptop or a Pinebook or something like that? So imagine that you have a device that will take your phone and turn it into a laptop, but the device is the shape, size, and pretty much the weight of a laptop. Is there any point in that, guys, do you think?
I'll be inclined to agree. I don't necessarily like the NextDock implementation of it. Just from running through the different scenarios there, the Maru OS version is more appealing to me than the NextDock. The most appealing to me, as you're alluding to, would be the Purism version. And the reason why is because they're two separate devices. So it's your laptop or desktop, and it's your phone. You're using the same applications, so you'd have the same familiarity of you're using whatever LibreOffice on your desktop, and you're using LibreOffice, let's just say, I don't think they have a mobile version, but just for the argument's sake, you're using LibreOffice on your phone, or you're using Google Calendar Gnome Calendar on your desktop, and Gnome Calendar on your mobile device. So there is that familiarity behind it, as long as there's some kind of cloud syncing between the two, as in you're writing your LibreOffice document on, and you have some kind of cloud storage, which could be provided by Purism themselves, ideally, or a verified third party that is officially sanctioned by Purism. And then as soon as, let's say, your laptop runs out of battery, or you close down your laptop and say, okay, I'm going to be commuting home, you could still be updating that document on your bus or train on your commute home or whatever. As long as there's that syncing, I don't mind the two devices, because you could just say, I'm powering off my phone because I don't want to receive phone calls right now. I'm powering off my phone, but I'm still able to work on that document. And then as soon as you're shutting down your laptop because you're like, okay, it's time to go home now, I'm turning my phone back on because my wife or girlfriend or son or daughter or whoever wants to contact me may want to contact me, so I am turning on my phone back on. And that seamless transition is very much appealing to me. So for me, if that is their idea, if that is their planned implementation of it, certainly that would be the best implementation out of these devices that I could see.
We don't, at the moment, we don't know about the syncing, because they proposed some cloud services that they will be preparing, Purism did. But everything at the moment is up in the air, because they don't have a product yet. But I think the cloud services should be available before the phone itself. Plus, obviously, this is pretty much down to the app developers. So they will have to. They could implement the syncing themselves as well with some independent servers. And they will also have to implement the scaling and the rearrangement of the interfaces for the big screens and small screens, and for my mouse and keyboard and for touch. So this is pretty much as long as this is done properly, it should be at least in my opinion the best way of doing convergence. It's not actually having one device for everything, but having information that you work with displayed the same information, this presented to you in a form that is best suited to the device and therefore to the situation you are currently in. So I think that if Purism pulls that off, that's definitely better.
I was just going to say, for just a point of clarification, since we alluded to what the Purism implementation of it is and what the Nextstock implementation is, the Morrow OS implementation, and very similar but different in a freedom sort of way, the Samsung DeX implementation, their implementation is your phone is your primary computing device, is the sole computing device, and then what you do is you go into your work in our office environment, you plug it into a dock, and that dock already has a monitor, a keyboard and mouse hooked up to it. So then you plug in your phone, which is the computing device, and then some sort of desktop appears up on the monitor. In the case of Morrow OS, it's based off Debian and XFCE. In the case of Samsung DeX, it's their own implementation of Android. Android, I believe you can kind of tweak it to make it look very desktop-like. So that's Samsung's implementation of it.
It's, I think you don't, they were originally, Samsung was making it work with some like DeX dock, but these days you only need a cable. So the Morrow OS and both the Morrow OS and Samsung can connect to the monitor via a cable. And Samsung actually has got two different implementation. One of them is
of course they do.
Yeah, it's weird. Like one of them is just Android, and Android on their flagships has got desktop mode. Yeah, so
okay.
you which I think is outrageous. Why would anybody want more Android in their life? I don't understand personally. it's just on the other implementation, which is like kind of kept quiet and aimed squarely at developers, at least on their website, is that you download this Ubuntu 16.04 onto your phone. So you download some kind of a Samsung application or that will allow you to install 16.04, a special version of 16.04, I think, on the Note 9 or the Tab 4, I think. So these are 500, 600 euro devices, as far as I remember. You plug a USB-C to HDMI cable into it, and you connect mouse and keyboard, or you can use the Samsung device as a mouse and keyboard, I think. And you have got a decent Linux distribution up on your screen. To me, the problem with this is, well, if I was considering spending so much money on a phone to buy a Samsung flagship out of all things, then I would probably spend even more on a decent laptop. To me, it comes down again. The only difference I think it can make is for people who already buy into the Samsung ecosystem and who already have these devices, and they can go and if they need to, they can use them as desktops as well. But if you are not willing to spend that much money, then the whole thing kind of doesn't work for you. The Morrow OS implementation is on the other side. You need either a Nexus 5, Nexus 5X, or the Galaxy S9 Plus. So again, the Galaxy S9 Plus is over about 500 euros or something like that. The two Nexuses are cheap, so you could use it for people who are who only can afford one device. They could use this, but from my personal experience, I know that the Nexus, if you buy it now, you spent about 120, 150 euros. But mine didn't last longer than 3 months. So they are at the end of their life at the moment. So I don't know if that's a good idea either.
Shane, I'm going to swing it back to you. So you immediately at the start said no. Do you have any more thoughts on this?
I mean, yeah, I can only repeat what I said, really. It's I was looking at some of the screenshots and some of the links we have here, and while it looks cool in theory, I mean, you can see like a phone hooked up to a screen, and you just see your little desktop there. I mean possibly it looks fun from an experimentation point of view, but I think the type of convergence you were talking about, Connor, is something I'd prefer, is just everything synced up. So I'm not sure if that's even considered convergence, but like that's how I want to do it. Like I do want it to be seamless, but I don't want to have to start like docking things. I mean, some point in the future, we could have a situation where your computer is your phone, and it's powerful enough to do absolutely everything. So it can serve as laptop, desktop, mobile device. And, you know, you dock it in that sense. So you go into work, you dock it, you go home, you dock it. That does sound kind of cool. Or maybe even wirelessly dock it. Like, maybe that's certainly a possibility.
The Maru OS can already wirelessly dock in a way because they can use Chromecast to connect a monitor.
I was literally going to say that.
That's cool.
Actually, you know, if you discount Purism because they don't have a product yet, out of all of the rest, the Maru OS I think are the best in my opinion because they use Lineage OS rather than some proprietary Android implementation. So they recently switched to Lineage, and they give you. They give you a real Linux distribution rather than Android and desktop mode like one version of Samsung and like the Nextdoc does. So that's and they propose that you can use some Chromecast to connect the phone to the monitor. It's probably quite there might be some lag, I'd imagine, but. I think they are going the right way. If what you want to achieve is to use your phone for everything, the Maru OS way is, in my opinion, the best one.
So, Mike, I believe you're going to resurrect the boner section. So, how's your zombie boner?
Well, I have a boner for bottle, and that's not my admission of alcoholism or anything, but. Bottle is a Python library that lets you run a Python-based server-side system. So imagine like PHP but Python, and it makes stuff like routing really easy. And I was using it at work for something, and it's an amazing project. I mean, it's called Bottle because there is a bigger project called Flask, which is like a full-on Python-based CMS. And I find Flask intimidating, and it does too many things, and it has got quite a steep learning curve. So for us who can't handle Flask, Bottle is the way to go.
Yeah, I actually have an unexpected boner. I hate when that happens.
Happens to me all the time on the bus.
I was... oh, God. I was checking, as you might have seen recently, I was checking out a Godot game engine. So that's my boner for this week, because I was going through the tutorials and just trying to learn how to use it. And I think my kind of training wheels kind of project, like that I took directly from the documentation, is very educational. It's very good. But I think to wet my feet, I'm going to maybe try to create a Breakout clone, because I love the game Breakout. So I really want to, and it seems like a simple one to implement. So yeah, Godot is my boner of the week.
So that's the end of our boner section. If you guys have been enjoying what we've been doing, we do have a support us section. So whether you want to buy us a beer or whatever, we do have various things, PayPal, various ways of supporting us. So on our website, there is a support us section. So this will always be free, so don't worry about that. But if you ever want to throw us a fiver or whatever to buy us a beer, it's greatly appreciated. Also, if you want to rant and rave and tell us that we've been absolutely shit with this podcast, you're perfectly entitled to do that. And our contact us section is on our website. We are on Telegram, and we have a lot of humorous conversations in our Telegram. We are on YouTube, we're on Twitter at Linux Lads, we're on that dreaded thing called Facebook, which, who knows, we may change that in the future, but for the moment we are on Facebook. We are on Mastodon, which is actually quite good. We're getting a lot of interaction on Mastodon. And if you want to give us any kind of feedback, positive or negative, trust me, we have had negative feedback, so we welcome that as well. is show@linuxlads.com. And in case you didn't believe us, we actually do believe it, or we do exist in real life, in case you want to go up and poke us in the eye or whatever. So if you want to hang out with us in real life, we are part of a meetup, so that link will also be in the contact us section. So we have been the Linux Lads, and I have been your host for this podcast. My name is Connor.
I've been Mike.
And I'm Shane.
See you guys.